We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
What we found was, again, what is so special about our business is what customers are sharing with us, and what an interesting privilege of a business it is, again, to start with people sharing the highlights of their life with us first before we even finish the transaction.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Digital disruption has been taking the world by storm for a while now, and it might seem like there aren't a lot of categories left to disrupt, but our next guest found one 5 years ago, custom framing. After a personal experience that left her disappointed and in sticker shock, Susan Tynan set out to create an easy, affordable online option for customers to frame and enjoy their favorite memories. Since 2014, her company FrameBridge has taken off, delighting customers and catching the eye of investors. And this year, Susan was named to the NRF Foundation's list of people shaping retail's future. Join us as we chat with Susan about how she grew the business and the career lessons that she's learned along the way. I'm very fortunate to be joined today by my friend, my colleague, and my co-host, Ellen Davis. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Thank you for letting me be here today.
Thank you for being here today. We've got a great guest. Mm-hmm. What do you think this is going to be all about?
I think this is going to be all about where the future of the industry is going and how really smart women are going to help us get there.
Well, Susan, are you ready to talk about...
I'm ready.
All right. Well, then let's talk about where this industry is going and how smart women are going to help us get there.
There you go.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about Susan Tynan. What's your background?
Right. Well, interestingly, first and foremost, I really am a consumer. I really am. I have always thought about consumer experiences and how I felt and when things were being delivered well. And in high school, I worked at The Gap.
Yay.
And loved it. That was really, you know, I truly my sort of grounding in what it feels like to deliver excellent service, to really know your domain, know how to please customers, to know how to understand different types of customers. It was really all at The Gap. I think back on it all the time. And even it's a joke at FrameBridge. People are like, I know at The Gap. This is what you learned when you were 16. But anyway, so I'm definitely a consumer and actually learned over the course of my career that I had to be in consumer businesses. So I've had an interesting career, management consulting, short stint at the White House in the budget office, and then a number of technology startups, but really sort of found my passion when I was in consumer tech and really just thinking about better ways to deliver things to customers.
You know, it is true. I mean, when you go in and you have something framed, there is a lot of sticker shock. But how have you been able to achieve this quality at the price point that you've set for these?
Right. Well, everything we touch matters to someone.
Yes, it does.
So
as a customer, I can tell you,
yes,
it matters.
Yes. So that is, it's an honor to be involved in people's, the highlights of people's lives. But that meant we couldn't, even in the early days, deliver something that was less than great. Mm-hmm. So we really designed the business to produce something terrific at a lower cost. And that was really by curating the selection. We limited the selection. And by producing centrally and really developing a state-of-the-art facility, production facility, where we could produce this totally custom, high-quality piece, each one important to each customer at a more affordable price.
So when you were coming up with this idea, and I'd love to talk about how, if this idea came to you or if you were seeking out an idea, if you think about, especially the people who've been in retail a long time, and the internet came along mid-90s, we started to see all these really cool startup ideas early 2000s. I mean, by 2014, like, wasn't every disruptive idea out there already, right? How had somebody not disrupted this business that I'm assuming for a lot of the traditional stores is really high margin? I mean, it seemed like, to me, the layman, the perfect idea. And it's amazing to me that it took a long time for somebody to come up with this. I'm curious how the idea came to you, if you can speak to that, and
sure,
what you learned about the traditional framing industry that made you think, hey, I think we're onto something here and we can approach this in a different way that will help us create a company that's really unique?
Well, the idea came to me through an experience I had. I had four national parks posters and I brought them to a frame store, and the consultation almost felt antagonistic. One, because I could feel I was being upsold the whole time, and because I sort of felt embarrassed of what I was framing. Like, it was not fine art. They were national parks posters, but they meant a lot to me. I had collected them on annual trips, hiking trips with my sister. And so I left the experience thinking, whoa, what sort of happened there? They cost $400 each to be framed. And so I felt like it was just not a good experience. And yet...
$400 each,
$1,600. So dear I Lord. Walked away. I said, that was more than my couch.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I just couldn't get the experience out of my head. And I noticed as I went on in life and had experiences and traveled, I would see things and I would think, oh, that would be a great... Oh, I can't, because I can't get it framed.
Right.
Truly, that was really the bridge to the wall of FrameBridge. Mm-hmm. Was like, how bizarre. I can't even experience all these other things because I can't do this thing. I can't get it framed. So started talking to a lot of people, and just the pattern was perfect. Everybody was shocked how expensive it was, and then everybody sort of opted out of the category afterward. And yet, when you go one layer deeper about what people framed, it was wonderful things. And so I really believed the category should be bigger, mm-hmm. and that younger people would be interested in it. And so I think other people weren't looking to rethink the category because they sort of thought maybe this is just an old fashioned thing that, you know, will sort of naturally tail off. It wasn't a growth category, mm-hmm. but we believed we could make it a growth category by changing how customers interacted by it. And that was really through ease, no friction, beautiful styles. Really, our emphasis is on what you're framing, and then certainly the pricing transparency.
Mm-hmm. Now, for people that haven't visited FrameBridge, tell us a little bit about that experience. I know it because I have, and I've had stuff framed by FrameBridge.
So,
and it's always turned out fantastic. But what is that experience?
So we start with the customer's own art and mementos. So customers either mail us art, we mail them packaging, and they mail us art, or they upload a photo from their phones or computers or Instagram feeds, and we print it and frame it. We turn around in days, not weeks or months, and pricing is totally clear. So customers go through our website and they know based on the size of their art how much it'll cost, and that's shipping included. And so really it was just very important to us, if we were going to reshape the category, that people could know how much it costs truly, because the dream was that when people interact with things, they're at a street fair or they're on vacation, or they see just a terrific photo on someone else's feed, they think, oh, I know exactly how much it would cost to frame that. It's not this sort of mystery of, could I ever do that? Also, we have what I think are beautiful curated selection of designs. That being said, if you are someone who either really wants to engage deeply with a designer or just wants an easy button, we have design services. So we have a design team who's ready to help you. If you either want to go deeper, show us your wallpaper, get a really deep consultation, or if you just, I have no idea, but I need a great gift for mom, we can help you there too.
I love the ease. I mean, it just is. The problem is I'm out of wall space. And literally to hang what I just got from y'all, I had to take something down, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with it. But this is far more important and looks so much better than what was there before. But yeah, it's the ease of being able to go on, just download the picture, and then you have so much to choose from. Now, that's probably for me. I think if I just sent it to y'all and said frame this, I'd be thrilled.
Yep.
But it's kind of fun going through and coming up with what you think looks best, mm-hmm. as well.
Susan, one of the things you mentioned, potentially framing has always been something that an older generation would think about, and making this applicable to a younger consumer. One of the things I really love about FrameBridge is your communication style, whether that's on social, through your emails, and the tone and the message that you approach your customers with, especially given the consumer mindset that you have. Can you talk about the way that you guys try to interact with both current and potential customers, and how that's kind of come up with the company in a way that feels really organic to who you are?
Absolutely. So I think first and foremost, we realized we had to get out of our own way. We talked a lot about who we are. I'm talking right now about who we are and how we started the company and why we produce a great product. But what we found was, again, what is so special about our business is what customers are sharing with us, and what an interesting privilege of a business it is, again, to start with people sharing the highlights of their life with us first before we even finish the transaction. And so it was important for us to make sure that we were showing off other customer stories, sharing that, encouraging people to celebrate the moments in their life that made them happy or made them proud. And so we've really been trying to, feature what's in the frame and bring that to life. We also really, because the origin of the company is really in making sure we're not intimidating and approachable.
It's very approachable.
We are trying to say, look, do you see these beautiful designs? You can get this gorgeous gallery wall in, we always say you can order in 5 minutes, you can hang it in 10 minutes. Like being approachable and having a design point of view don't have to be at odds. We want them to be together as one sort of comprehensive, easy, exciting package.
The name Framebridge, where did that come from?
So it's a combo. Really, the function was that it truly bridged you having these wonderful things and not being able to get them in your wall. But my pal Emily, who actually works now for Blue Bottle Coffee, came up with the name because we were just, brainstorming. And she said, doesn't it sound like sort of like a quaint village where they do beautiful handcrafted things? And we said, sure. So it was a little bit that too. So the B is lowercase because it's Framebridge, like a beautiful place.
That's great.
The place is actually in Lexington, Kentucky.
I was going to say, well, that's right outside of London somewhere. the great county of Framebridge.
Beautiful.
So another quick question for you. When you look back, when you're looking forward. So you started online and now you're opening stores?
Yes.
Now, but don't you realize brick and mortar's dying?
We don't believe it.
Oh, what? That's so weird.
We don't believe it. We really believe we have a purpose to serve our customers and to serve our customers however they want to be served. And I think we feel we can be totally true to what we set out to do, but in a retail environment. But we didn't just jump in. We warmed ourselves up to it. So we did a number of pop-ups. And I would say it took us too long probably to realize we should be doing this. We were like, yeah, no, this pop-up data is compelling, but maybe because it was limited time only. Maybe because, we sort of tried to talk our way out of it, I think, for the exact reason you say, because it sounded counterintuitive. But really, we now have a growing conviction that storefronts are important to our growth, and that our customers, the convenience-oriented ones, the price-oriented ones, the design-oriented ones, all of our customers, with all of the reasons they shop with us, would like this opportunity to stop by and see us in real life.
Yeah.
I know that your stores have not been open really long, but I'm curious in those weeks or months whether there were any learnings that you had from interacting with customers one-on-one that either the managers or associates would come back and say, oh, we've come up with this conclusion, or we're seeing this trend that maybe wasn't as easily defined online. Have you realized anything about your customers or the business that you've learned from selling at the store versus something that you've learned on the web?
Absolutely. I was, the first few weeks of the store was like hiding in the back, like with my ear against the wall, trying to hear absolutely everything, which is amazing because we look at the data and the responses of hundreds of thousands of customers. So we do have a lot of knowledge online. And in some ways, I think that made us really well suited to go in this direction from online to offline. However, of course, there is just sentiment and qualitative information you get when you're talking to people in person. And so absolutely, we've learned new things. And I think we've learned things about how to expand other things customers want. Because I do think online, the feedback you get is often, you can infer it based on data. So it's a bounce rate, right? Well, someone left this page because there was something they did not want.
Right.
And in person, you can find out exactly what people wanted. So I think it's been great. And it's fun to see really across our company, so much energy. We truly, the woman who's running retail operations for us has been, trying to say, get out of this store, because everyone from, you know, engineering to marketing to merchandising wants to be sitting there talking to people.
Do you, it's interesting that you made the point about you can see it when people are on, you know, certain pages, how quickly they leave and things of that sort. And, you know, I look at my own experience. I mean, I was probably on the site because I was just trying all these different things. I was probably on for a good 15 to 20 minutes before I even made the purchase. So what is the average time that somebody really spends looking at frames, trying different mats, things of that sort?
Yeah. So our business is different from just clicking to buy a sweatshirt.
Oh, for sure.
It is a little less impulsive if you're starting with something you have. And we find the journey is a little bit different. If someone has art, then they're really usually thinking about what frame flatters their art. We find people with photos are usually spending the time thinking, is this the one about their own photos? Mm. So it's a little bit of a different journey. And so we're continuously adapting the website to reflect those journeys. It really depends. Again, some people visit us several times before purchasing. Some people can sail through. But importantly, we have built the retail experience to support those different journeys as well. So we say you can be in and out in 5 minutes if you want to. 5 minutes is our bar. We designed the tool. We designed the tools.
It's just not
so
possible.
You could be in and out in 5 minutes. And it was such a delight, actually, when we first opened to see a customer. She came in yoga clothes and said, I don't think I can do this because I have a class. And we said, oh, no, you can do this. So that was fun. I'm really trying to make it not a burden of a chore. That was the essence of the whole business, that this shouldn't be a burden. This should be awesome and fun. And so you can do it in 5 minutes, or if you want to, you know, work with us and design the gallery wall of your dreams, you can do that as well.
Well, I think one of the interesting things, I'm sorry, Ellen, I'll shut up. But one of the interesting things is
I'm used to it.
Yeah. We've known each other for a long time. You mentioned the woman that came in with the yoga clothes, but do you have people just stopping by the store saying, I've used FrameBridge and I didn't even know I don't have anything. I just want to say hello and welcome to the neighborhood, or it's good to see you, or thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that I think is reinforcing of sort of the friendly, open brand we want to be.
Right.
And, you know, it's important to us to obviously show off our wares, but do it in a way that's really reflecting interesting things people frame. So a part of our stores is to have rotating gallery walls celebrating local things. And so that's a reason to stop in and see what's happening on the walls. But yeah, absolutely. It's been fun to see people stop by. And again, I think what we hear most of all, which is really fun, is people with the pride of what they framed. Mm-hmm. That is what people come in and say. They're like, oh, I love you all, I use you all, but great company. They say those things, but really what they say is like, you know, I had all of the invitations from all of the events related to my wedding, and we decided to finally frame them. So it's like, you know, it's really, there's both the pride of what they framed and also like a little bit of accomplishment for finally having done it.
Mm-hmm. Do people bring their phones out and show you the pictures like I just did that I had framed?
Yes.
I'm sure that.
But again, what a great business, right? This is not people showing, although I'm sure you get a lot of pride if you're in car repair, but like people aren't showing me their problems. People are showing me their highlights. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
I wanted to talk a little bit about growth and managing a company through growth, especially now with Rent the Runway and Glossier being $1 billion valuations and two female-founded companies.
I am so excited about that. I just have to say, I truly was like over the moon. And I'd say two female-run companies, absolutely, who are run with like, there's no question who is at the helm of those companies.
Right. Right.
They're both of those women are probably a decade younger than me. Like that was an awesome news cycle.
I totally agree with you. And I know you've talked a little bit about working with investors and how, you know, how do you go into, especially for other female founders or aspiring female founders who are listening to this, right? How do you go into a meeting with an investor or VC, whatever the case may be, and make your case, especially in an industry that's generally fairly male dominated. How did that work for you? What advice do you have for people who are coming up who feel like they have an idea, but they just need capital to make it go?
So I learned a lot during the process of fundraising. And I think at first I was too earnest, which was like, truly, this is the problem we're solving. And this is exactly what I'll do in the next few months. to make progress against our goals. That's great. You have to show you know what you're doing and you have to show you know what the next steps are. But I think in the beginning, I wasn't showing the big enough vision. Mm-hmm. And I had huge ambitions for this business. But it sort of felt, I don't know, too audacious, I guess, to go in there and say, you know, you don't go in and say, I'd like to disrupt an industry. You know, and so I think... I know. And I think I would say just traditionally, I think maybe if you, the person you imagine as a startup founder, maybe a young man might come in with more swagger. Mm-hmm. And so I really did learn not to be, I had to be authentic to who I was, but also to make sure I was letting people in on how big I wanted the business to be, what I wanted it to be. Because investors, there are other ways to make money. Investors want to be along on an exciting journey.
Right.
And so you have to make sure you're showing them that as well.
Mm-hmm. And then, so that's a piece of it, right? Of being able to have the confidence to speak your vision into reality in a way that is authentic to yourself. But what about, you know, can you talk a little bit about what you've learned on, you know, securing the deal? So, is there anything that you would give or what not to do, maybe?
I think truly, the process is about mental management. So it's, you know, there are certainly, I guess, tips and tricks, which is, you know, it's going to take a lot of meetings mm-hmm. to get any amount of money. And, you know, then there are sort of truisms that people tell you that are really true, like you should always raise more money than you think you'll need and things like that. And so you'll hear some of the same advice and think maybe you're an exception. But I found with most of those things, there's a reason everybody says them. But really, it's about just continuing one foot in front of the other, but certainly refining your pitch. You will hear people have questions about your business. Consider those things if you, it's objection handling. If you figure out, you know, how to respond to those questions and you are better prepared for the second pitch, not only are you more likely to raise money, but you're more likely to build a better business. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, when I stopped looking at investor meetings as a burden in some way and more a privilege, you are speaking to some of the smartest people in the world who want to hear about your idea, whether or not they fund it. Chances are they're not going to. You are going to learn. That mm-hmm. is not a waste of your time. That is a great use of your time.
Such a good way to think about it.
Well, we're almost out of time. You know, I listened to Ellen's questions. I think it's like having two co-hosts. I'm the People Magazine and she's the Economist. That I mean, those are great. Those are great questions. But before we leave,
to talk about the housewives or... I could do a whole podcast.
We'll get you back. Before we let you go, you have heard the podcast before, so you kind of know what's coming up next. So are you ready for rapid fire?
I'm ready.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is rapid fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
All right, Ellen, start us off.
What do you think the best thing is about living in Washington, D.C.?
Cherry blossoms. Mm-hmm.
I always say Washington's a good place to visit and a great place to leave. But
no, Smithsonian.
it's a great place. What is the last thing you framed?
Oh, the last thing I framed was a signed part of Danny Meyer's book, Setting the Table. So Danny Meyer, restaurant tour with real customer focus.
Awesome.
Love that. What is one retailer you think is really getting it right today?
I love Nordstrom.
Mm-hmm. Best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I ever received? Well, I didn't receive it directly from her, but Billie Jean King, pressure is a privilege. Think about it a lot because you wouldn't be in this position with all this on you unless someone thought you could do it.
What's always in your fridge?
Cheese.
Any specific kind of
manchego.
Cheese?
Manchego.
Oh, I love manchego cheese.
All right, Susan, I'm going to let you off the hook now. That was awesome. You did a great job. You were even prepared, and you still did a great job. So if somebody wants to learn more about Framebridge, where are they going to go?
Framebridge.com.
That was so easy. I could have said that. I knew that. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. We've really enjoyed it. You've been a great guest.
Thank you so much.
And Ellen, it's always a privilege. Thank you very much for being my co-host today. And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. Now, you can find more information about what we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.